Hi, welcome to another Expert Insights discussion. Today we're joined by Conor van der Ham from Topline, one of our expert partners. Following his recent article outlining some of the revenue management practices that could be considered to run a little close to unethical, we felt compelled to hear the words from his own mouth and get a slightly deeper insight. Obviously, what are or are not ethical boundaries is a personal viewpoint, and this conversation is far from preachy. But, in our opinion, it does hold a mirror up to some of the techniques used, which may lead to a guest feeling more like a walking ATM than a welcome visitor. Hope you enjoy the conversation.
Hey, Conor, good to see you again. How are you? You well?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again, Trevor.
It's always good to have you on these calls because you will always talk about topics that no one else seems to want to talk about. And the recent article that we just published that you just written about the dark side of revenue management practices, I just thought we have got to get you on because I'm sure a lot of people have already read it, but I just thought I've got to speak to you direct. And almost ask you, man, are you kind of serious? Because you're in this game. This is your world. This is what you're doing. And you've like laid out 10 practices.
As you know, Trevor, when something kind of is bothering me, when, as far as the company is going, or there's a topic or theme that pops up regularly, and there's a lot of frustration that builds up on my side, usually I'll vent that out by writing an article. In this case, it was for Hotel Executive Magazine, and which always great to publish for them. And I thought it was fun because the topic had been, the reoccurring theme had been owners wanting us to increase revenue at any cost. Okay. Yeah. And there's a fine line. I mean, there's a really fine line between doing what it takes to generate revenue, generate income, and keeping it ethical, because you can do a lot. I mean, that's what it boils down to. You can manipulate the systems to add all kinds of hidden fees, right? Mm-hmm. And the question becomes like, is that ethical? Is it ethical? Is it something that guests expect now? Is it something that they want to see? Well, they never want to see it, but that they expect to see, mm-hmm. And it was just a topic that had bubbled up quite a few times.
This is not the discussion to say what is ethical and what isn't ethical, because everyone will have their own interpretation of that, right? And there'll be differing degrees. But I mean, when you talk about, the first thing that you mentioned in the article was the hidden fees, and you've just mentioned it there as well. And the hidden fees, rate manipulation. First of all, what do you mean by that? What is going on? And then why in your perception is that maybe on the borderline of not being quite ethical?
Yeah. So as far as hidden fees go, they can come in a lot of different forms. They can be fees that that you pay for resorts, right? Additional fees that really should be included. these resort fees, a lot of those, like Wi-Fi. Okay, well, every hotel has free Wi-Fi. Like
everyone wants Wi-Fi.
If there's no actual value add, then you're just throwing in a junk fee to pull additional money. And oftentimes they don't see that until the actual booking is going through. And so they've already assumed, I'm paying a $99 rate. And then at the end, all of a sudden I've got a $30 per night surcharge, essentially, for the privilege of staying at this resort for free Wi-Fi and one complimentary bottle of water. You know what I mean? It's questionable whether that's ethical or not. And I think that's becoming more on display in recent weeks. Really about 2 months ago, Hilton published to their owners, they published a message to them letting them know, hey, we're all on board with having transparency and fees across mm-hmm. all channels. Mm-hmm. And we're going to, take steps to make sure that we're not only compliant with the legislation that's already in place here in the United States, but legislation that's on the table. We're going to back it because we want to make sure that everybody has a level playing field. Guests know what they're going to be paying as they're going through the booking process. And so those are the hidden fees that are talked about in that section.
So when we talk about, or when you hear people talking about the airlines and how, you know, you've got your flight price, but then if you want to check in more luggage or so, you know, when you're
add-ons,
the first price you see is not the price it ends up with. So where does that line between this being ancillary or other add-on revenue and being hidden fee revenue?
Yeah, recognizing that I'm not the arbiter of all things ethics, right? we're all just trying to navigate our way through this gray world, right? And that's the case in revenue management. I acknowledge that in the article. But for me, I mean, it really boils down to what I think as a consumer, because I pay for these things too when I travel, right?
Yeah.
What I think is reasonable, right? Because those fees you're talking about, add-on and ancillary fees, there's something tied to it. You're getting something additional, whether you would have needed that or not. All right.
Yeah.
So like your extra luggage for a airline, right? You get one free bag and then extra is going to cost you more. But again, you know, resort fees at a place that doesn't give you, there's nothing tied to it that's additional. That to me is just a junk fee is what it is. And ultimately at the end of the day, I want to think that the service we're providing for our hotels is a benefit to somebody and that everybody's making money off of it and everybody's benefiting from it. If I start to feel like I'm price gouging or we're doing some things that I as a consumer think are unethical, I'm going to have a hard time sleeping at night.
Is there not the argument where people say, well, they got choice if they don't like it, they don't have to.
They always have choice. Yeah, they always do. And that's and unfortunately, that's kind of how people are letting hotels know that they're not okay with it is by simply not booking it or not, not staying at their property and going elsewhere. And that's, you know,
are we seeing that flow through? Because I wonder if sometimes that's the hotel's answer, but people don't feel that they actually do have a choice. They kind of just have to put up with the system it is.
Yeah, in broad terms, I'm not sure. Specific hotels I know of, several of them are seeing a decline because of those things.
Okay.
And it's also really hard. It takes a lot of time and analysis to determine if that's the cause. And we often, as revenue managers, don't have all the information we need. We don't do an exit survey of why you didn't book with us, right? So I don't have that information to say, here's a direct correlation. This is why. This junk fee is why they decided not to book with you. So it's pretty anecdotal when we're talking to hotel owners. And as a result, since we don't have any concrete evidence to back it, it goes unheeded.
Yeah. And I guess I always think, you've probably reached the tipping point when governments have to legislate against something. It's like, you know, once you've reached that stage and someone's had to step in to say, okay, you've probably gone too far now. that's when it should be the wake up call, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the US in particular, we're seeing that where, again, legislation has been proposed and is actually being backed by the major brands. And so that's encouraging. Okay. Because it's not a big controversy in those situations where government's trying to legislate and the companies are saying this is going to hurt us. No, if the companies themselves who would be mostly impacted are backing it, then I think it's a great thing.
Right. When talking about big companies, OTAs.
Oh, OTAs.
you touched on those that kind of rate parity. I think you called it the rate parity dance. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, and it really does feel like a dance, but not like a fun one, you know? Not that I'm a huge dancer. I'm 6'5", so like I'm not a huge dancer anyway.
Well, you are a huge dancer, but not necessarily a good dancer.
I'm a huge dancer, but I'm not huge into dancing. There we go. Oh, very good. It does feel like a dance because it's like all of these OTAs, let me back up, just baseline here. Big brands have chain-wide negotiated deals with OTAs to say, we're going to pay you this much commission and we are requiring everyone to have a parity in their rates that are being displayed. Okay. Mm-hmm. Booking.com, Expedia, and our brand.com sites have to be the same rate for rack. There are OTAs have started, especially the larger ones have started to shop each other to see if somebody else is offering a lower rate. Okay. And so it's not just It's not just brand versus Expedia. Now, yeah. Brand versus Expedia versus, versus Travel. Right. No, it's all. And so that's why it's a dance, because, you know, not understanding how all the rate shopping happens and the timing of when the rate shopping happens. If I push through a rate and we're totally above board, we're living by the parity standards at, let's say, a Marriott hotel. Mm-hmm. And we push those through, and then all of a sudden Expedia is like, no, but booking.com has a 5% discount off of this. And so we're going to price match that. And then now we're out of parity with brand.com. You know, those are caching issues and those things that are constantly happening. We spend way too much time as revenue managers trying to go find out what happened. Is it a caching timing issue, or is it something that we've actually set up? Because there's so many different rate programs, and depending on which systems you're using, it can be very complex to make sure you didn't set up just one little discount somewhere that's now kicking in and it's offering a discount that you didn't intend, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time, hoteliers, the owners are getting dinged for parity issues. So if you did make a mistake somewhere in your rate setting, right? And you are offering a little bit of a discount, maybe through mobile or through breakfast included or whatever it is, the OT Marriott, let's say the brand, we'll just use Marriott as an example, they will actually fee the hotel for being out of parity. So they're shopping using a software that is not 100% accurate. And when they see a parity violation, they then ding the hotel financially to pay for that parity fee, right? Now, in this whole massive topic, there are a lot of things that we revenue managers, whether we are required by brand to or not, we can set up discounts through OTAs, for instance, like Expedia, and not be caught. Right. We can have parity violations, offer additional incentives through OTAs, and we can avoid detection. We just can't. And so the question is, the ethical question then is, you know, we as a branded hotel, are we living up to the commitments that the brand has made, even at the expense potentially of our hotel's performance? Because Marriott's made it for the entire brand, but my hotel needs this.
Yeah.
Because in my market, Expedia is a great producer and we need to compete. And so am I going to keep with Marriott's standard and Marriott's agreement to Expedia, or am I going to offer a discount if I can avoid detection? So that's the ethical line there. That's the ethical, you know, dilemma.
And just so that Marriott don't sue us, it's just using it as an example. Just an example.
And we don't represent you. I'm not even saying we work with any of your hotels, because, you know, I wouldn't say that.
Okay. One of the other areas you touched on, and it's funny, there's been a few articles we've carried recently about this overbooking, overselling. When I read it, I kind of understand why it happens. But if I was on the consumer side and I'm the one that gets bumped, I would be majorly, well, I won't use the word, but I would be major. It just feels really bad.
It does. Yeah. So we parse that line by saying we overbook, but we don't oversell. Okay.
Right. Okay.
It's exactly the same thing until the day of arrival when the guest is in front of you. Okay. Here's the thing. On the revenue management side, we know we have to overbook. Otherwise, we're going to end one or two rooms shy.
Because some people will just not turn up.
Because people will not show people and expect not to be charged. Other people will cancel very, very last minute. Exceptions happen, and they happen every single day, right?
Okay.
And so,
just statistically, I mean, would that be seriously that you're looking at? And I know this is anecdotal. We haven't done any prep for this at all. We're just chatting. Yeah. But I mean, from your experience with hotels you work with, and when you were working in major hotel groups as well, is it typically that, you know, 90-95% of all hotels are having people just not turning up?
Yeah, no, I would say the vast majority, the overwhelming majority, have no shows daily or late cancellations. Okay. I don't know that I put a percentage on it, but I can tell you at most of our hotels, our recommendation is going to be anywhere between 1 and 5 rooms of overbooking per night is where we'll generally sit.
Right.
And that the the time period when we would taper that off to, you know, remove that overbooking varies by hotel. Sometimes by the time you get to day of arrival, there should be no cancellations. You've got all the credit card information you need, so a no-show can be charged. And so you'll taper that and you'll say no overbooking today, right?
Yeah.
We're already in a good position. But it's not uncommon at hotels that are doing what they're supposed to be overbooked by one or two rooms day of arrival.
Okay.
And then we expect those no-shows. It scares the heck out of the front office team. You know, front office managers.
Exactly. You're literally throwing your front office manager under a bus.
Fortunately, right. But fortunately, I've been a front office manager at a very large hotel. And so I understand what it's like to walk somebody and I understand how that can be pitched. And here's the great news. Like, if you do end up walking somebody, so if you check in or if you're going to check in, Trevor, and you're the one getting bumped because you showed up at 8:30 p.m. and, you know, they're overbooked by one room, or maybe their AC, air conditioning went down that day. And so now, even though they didn't oversell, you're still getting bumped. Here's the great news. Your room is being comped that night. The hotel is going to pay for your room at another hotel, and they're going to likely transport you over to that hotel as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's not where you wanted to be. It's not ideal. But from a front office manager's perspective, if you train your staff, you can let them know, hey, this can be actually a pretty good opportunity to win over a customer and say, hey, I know this big tragedy, woe is me, is going to befall you, but you're getting a free room tonight and I'm going to take care of all of it. I'm sorry it's not here. It's unfortunate, but you're getting a free room. You can pitch that in a way that it really makes it okay.
So that actually sounds like, okay, it's a legitimate strategy to make sure that you're delivering what you want, what you need as a hotel, which is to be full.
Yeah. Right.
What you're saying is, if I understand correctly, that from that questionable ethical point of view, it's maybe that you're not filtering down. I can't remember the phrase that you use. You know, you're not tapering down on particular days. You just have that strategy locked in and it continues, and you're just, you know, creating then a bad situation.
It comes down to having a good relationship with the front office team. Day of arrival, the front office team and the general manager should be the one really keeping a close eye on it and communicating with the revenue manager, say, hey, we're full, right? We need to turn off overbooking. Or hey, for tomorrow we're oversold by two, maybe you haven't seen that just yet, let us know, we can turn it off. And so having multiple sets of eyes to make sure that we don't overbook, because the last thing we want to do is actually walk somebody, because not only is it a guest service issue, but there's a financial issue, because now we have to pay for somebody else's room elsewhere. Hotel owners don't like to do that, understandably. So we really don't want to, but when it comes down to what we call sellout efficiency, okay? So anytime we want to get to that 100% number, right?
Yeah.
If we miss one or two rooms per night because we don't overbook, we're talking about $3,000 to $10,000 over the course of a month. That's missed revenue.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Talking about a lot of money. And so it needs to be done, but you need as many players, coordinating that and looking at it as possible.
That makes sense. And another point you made, which isn't necessarily linked to this, but it talks about hotel availability and so that creating that sense of urgency, that fear of missing out, which I think I was under the impression that there was legislation, maybe it's in the EU, against being able to do that. I may be wrong. I don't know if it's in the US, but
It's particularly the case with OTAs that I've noticed. I don't think any of the major brands that we work with do this. I could be wrong, but most of the OTAs will say, hey, there's only two rooms left at this rate, get them now, right?
Okay.
We know that that's not true, because we're looking at how many rooms we have left to sell, and they're saying we only have two rooms left at this rate, creating that sense of urgency to buy.
Genuinely, you really do believe that that is a flat out misrepresentation?
It is a lie. I mean, it is. If an OTA says we've got three left at this rate,
right?
That's not true. It's not, because you've got 100 of them left at that rate. You just do, right? And so that is a misrepresentation.
I thought because I mean, this is my misunderstanding. So I've got to know a little bit more, but it's why I want to ask you. Yeah. So I'm a consumer. I'm sitting there. I'm thinking, okay, well, I know hotels don't put all their rooms to the OTAs. They have a certain number. So in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, well, they've given 10 rooms at that price to the OTA. They've sold 7. They've got 3 left. That sounds like a logical...
In most situations, they do give their entire inventory is available for OTAs to book through, except on special events and in big hot dates where we intentionally limit the amount of rooms that we're going to sell through OTAs. Mm-hmm. In most cases, they have run of house. So like if we've got a 100-room hotel and
here's our inventory, here's the price.
You've got 100 rooms to sell for next March, but there's still a sense of urgency. Book now. There's only 3 left at this price. And it's just not true. It just isn't. However, they want to, say, oh, well, we're only pulling 3 rooms of we're only allotted 3 rooms of inventory at a time, which again isn't true. And so there's only 3
until
left.
The next 3 or so.
I'm telling you, those numbers that they put as inventory left are never accurate. They make 0 sense. It's just for sense of urgency. You never see we've only got 20 rooms left. You don't see that. It's we've only got 3 rooms left, or we've got
5 rooms or something. Yeah. So it's single digits, isn't it?
Well, and those are the little nuanced things that like that helps our hotel because we're trying to move rooms and they're stoking sense of urgency. So they're going to book with us because they're going to lose it if they don't book now. But is it ethical? Like, is it ethical to lie to a consumer, even if it's a white lie or you're, mincing words?
So ethics, how about ethics with your staff? Because if you, how many companies set up incentives? And I guess this, and it was interesting, I was looking at 2 points that you made, was one around staff incentives and then also upselling and cross-selling, and those two can there is some legitimate areas around upselling and cross-selling, but sometimes those incentives, it reminds me of when we've had big financial issues where the people selling pensions or investments were incentivized and they weren't always necessarily giving the most honest and ethical advice. So talk about that.
I've got a good example for that one. So what comes to my mind most is front office incentives, okay? We want to incentivize our staff to upsell. We want to have add-ons if your hotel has those available. We want to do that because it generates a lot of revenue. It really does. Ancillary revenue, same day. And it keeps them engaged and gives your staff an incentive, which is, it's a win for everybody, right?
Yep.
But you need to give them actual things to upsell. They can't make those things up. So for an example... This is where it gets. You may have a front office agent that's a really good salesman, okay, and they can sell sell water to a camel. Is that what? No, that's not the term. Whatever, they can sell an ice cube.
Sell snow to a penguin, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So they could sell to whatever, okay. And so recently, we had a situation where a front office agent upsold the guest who's standing in front of them, walk in, wanted to book a room, upsold them a pet service fee at a hotel.
A pet service fee.
Yep. Right. So like, hey, they brought a dog with them hotel actually doesn't charge additional for that. They just allow pets. They tacked on it. They said, oh, you got your pet with you. So it's an additional $100 for the pet service cleaning fee, which is a common thing, right? But this particular hotel did not charge.
Because they don't charge. It's one of their competitive things.
Exactly. It's one of their competitive advantages. So they upsold them something that was non-existent that other guests can get for free if they booked online, just because he could, right? And so it's like, those are the things you can't be doing that. Like upselling Wi-Fi. A lot of branded hotels, you can pay for enhanced Wi-Fi. The standard is free, but if you want faster Wi-Fi, it's $5 a night. That sort of thing. But
kind of interested to know what Wi-Fi connection they put me on them for the enhanced one, as opposed, because what do they got? 2 different, am I logging in on different things?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. I've tried to figure that out myself when I'm staying at one of our hotels and I'll get the enhanced and I'm like, it's exactly the same speed, but Like, what is that? I think a lot of road warriors who do gaming will pay for that, because there probably is a speed enhancement, you know. Not a lot of hotels don't even have Ethernet ports anymore, so you can't hardwire in, which I've heard quite a few guests complain about. But it's just making sure that if you're going to upsell, that's great, but let's actually give them value to it. It's a value add that they know they're going to pay for, not something that they're already getting for free.
And making sure, just because making sure your incentives are encouraging your staff to not make up things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, and that same like incentivizing your staff thing goes, we've had a different article about this, but like directors of sales being incentivized to reach their sales goals, which can often, often undermine the transient strategy, because they'll sell to a group at a much lower rate where we could sell those rooms for a higher rate on a different channel. And the salesman hits their goal, but it's at the expense of the hotel's revenue. And so like, it's not really, you know, an ethical question, but it's like, let's make sure our incentives are aligning to help our departments work together for the benefit of the hotel. Let's not put them at odds with each other.
Yeah, that's very interesting. As I say, it was just I had to jump on quickly with you, ask you about it, talk to you about it. I mean, one of the last bits that you mentioned is around loyalty programs. So how is a loyalty program potentially unethical then?
Yeah, good question. So loyalty programs are what makes it's what makes the big brands so successful, particularly in the US, but also, you know, internationally. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing at face value that's unethical there. But there are some practices when it comes to expiring points, how points translate into actual money. There's just some questionable stuff there, right? Because you can buy points, right? And mm-hmm. so you're taking physical dollars or pounds sterling, and you're translating those into ethereal, you know, hotel bucks, right?
Yep.
And that translation needs to be ethical and needs to be looked at as currency, frankly. Mm-hmm. And the value of that, especially in the world of digital currency that we have now, like that needs to be pretty clearly defined, and then it needs to be adhered to.
I reiterate what I said at the beginning, that A, thanks for writing it. B, thanks for coming on and talking about it, because you sit there on the other side of the fence. And even in my side here, where I'm talking with people like you, talking to tech providers who are obviously providing solutions, but the hotels use them how they want to use them. And then you're sitting there with your consumer hat on and you're thinking, okay, I kind of get the commercial reality, but man alive, you know, this feels like I'm no longer a guest. I'm just a walking wallet or a walking ATM. And it's like, how much can we kind of squeeze out of them? And I guess it's also our fault then as consumers, isn't it? Because we totally put up with this nonsense.
I tell my wife all the time that the reason her makeup costs so much is because she pays for it. You know, like they're getting gouged for something that really didn't cost that much to make. I mean, it's capitalism, but at some point, like, you need to have a united front and say, we're not going to do this, because at this point, it's just too much. And I mean, don't you as a consumer feel it? I know economies are in rough shape as the, you know, inflation is rampant over the past few years. And so naturally we're going to feel that. Me as a consumer, the reason that this really sparked was, number one, for my owners having these conversations with them constantly of late. And then number two, being a consumer booking a room in Las Vegas for the end of November, I just went through it and experienced it as a guest. I experienced it as a consumer. And I was like, this is lousy. And in this situation,
can you talk about that without naming the hotel? What was your
experience? In this situation, I'm going to a conference, and because the conference is held at this particular resort, I need to book there, and that's the requirement. And they have a special rate, etc. But by the time I got to the end of it, so I didn't really have a choice. Like, I could go stay somewhere else and then just shuttle in and out every day, or, you know, take an Uber, but I didn't really have a choice, right? I needed to stay there. And again, the rate that they had negotiated was a really solid rate. It was really good for this group. And then by the end of that transaction, when it came time to pay the bill, to put my credit card information in, it was 30% higher. It was 30% higher than the rate because of resort fees. I understand taxes have to be added on there. That's a separate, it was more than 30% because taxes were on top of that.
Right.
But then the city taxes for Las Vegas alone, holy smokes, man. Like they're raking it in because like municipalities and counties and cities are tacking on ridiculous, ridiculous fees. And it's not always taxes. Sometimes it's lodging.
I guess that's to your point at the beginning, isn't it? It's like, well, that has to be paid for staying in that room. So having it separate, it's like, well, it's not. The cost of staying in that room includes those taxes. So that should be the price for the room. Has it built in? There, you know, the accounting on the hotel side to separate it out. Well, that's not the consumer's problem. It's like it's not like I have an option back to what we were talking about with the airlines. You know, if you want a meal and they don't provide one, but you want to buy it, you have the option. I don't have an option of paying city, county, whatever taxes. It's just the cost of staying there.
And what I found interesting is that airlines actually do a pretty good job with it. Because when you go to book an airline, a flight, and you're Googling it, you go through Google Flights or something, it shows you the actual total price. And then later,
it shows you what your airfare was, and it breaks it down for you, doesn't it?
It breaks it down for you.
Yeah, but exactly. It's like that. They've, and that's probably fair when we brought it up at the beginning.
It would be my hope that hotels, as far as their rate transparency goes, would take a note out of the page out of the book of airlines in just that regard, not in everything else, but just in that regard, which is, put the total after taxes and fees at the front and then break it down for me, right? I think that would be great to see.
And no one would ever do it this way, but I quite like, there's always been the discussion about the attribute-based selling and, being able to, and we all talk about personalization and people choosing what they want. If I want to come over and don't want the Wi-Fi because I could maybe use my phone data and that's perfectly okay, let me click it off or click it on, so to speak, whichever way you want to come at it. But, no one's ever going to put the full price and then you can take the stuff off that you don't want. They'll do it the other way around. But I just wish it would be, here are the things that you can choose to add on or take off, but whatever I don't have a choice on, that should be what the price is.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with that. And I think attribute-based pricing is a really cool concept. And I hope that at some point we get to that point because this just talking economically, macro-wise, like the separation between rich and poor is becoming more exacerbated is what we're told and what we're seeing. And so consumers still need lodging accommodations, regardless of whether they have a lot in their bank account or not. And so, yes, there are usually options, but there's not always options for them to stay when they go, they need to get a hotel room. And so giving them the option to say, hey, if you just want to strip down everything to just the basics, you're getting a bed, you're getting a room, we're going to have the power on, your TV is going to work, but you don't need all the extra. The Wi-Fi is a good example, breakfast included example, a lot of these other things, to only pay for what you need, right?
Yeah.
And I think that would be.
Well, then also, as a business, if we're talking about, we always talk about total revenue, but then through the pandemic shifting towards profitability, you know how much it costs to provide that Wi-Fi, you know how much it costs to provide the breakfast. So, that you can price it and what profit you're making on it. You know how much it costs to clean the room. So, suddenly if you're able to break these things down, the ability to bundle it up or not, as the case may be, it enables the guests to personalize what they actually want for that trip.
Consumers are wanting to go that direction, and that's their desire. And it's that way they have choices. They have choices when they watch television, if they're going to stream. They have choices when they, with their employment. Like the next generation is like, I'm not taking this crap. It's not exactly what I want. I'm gone. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so that's where we're heading, is that consumer preference and consumer choice.
Yeah.
And so hotels that don't start taking that approach of attribute pricing are going to fall behind. I can see it. I can see it happening. And you got to give people flexibility and give the people what they want.
I think that's a good way to end it. Just give people what they want.
Give the people what they want, man.
And that's brilliant. Thanks again for the conversation. Always enjoyable.
Thank you, Trevor. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Connor for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. You can contact us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. If you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. And if you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.